Hello, I'm Jim Cornell, and this is the WalkingPost.com podcast. Walking Post is the news website dedicated to walking, with all the latest on new festivals, trails, books, gear, and more. The podcast today is airing on Friday, March the 21st, and believe it or not, another week without rain here. But of course, the forecast is for rain here in Scotland at the weekend, and then back to fine again, just to mess up those weekend walking plans. I guess I could just throw the rain gear on. Last weekend we went up to Milgai, which isn't pronounced the way it looks. It's the place where the West Highland Way starts. But instead we went to Mugdock Country Park. Very nice place, however, the trail that we picked was kind of a nightmare. So many trees had been felled that they created a tree wall about 20 feet high that you couldn't get over or around. So we tramped through boggy forest, scrambled under trees, and did about an extra 2 miles before rejoining the path further east. It was worth it, though, as the views were really good. A busy week this week with interviews and setting up interviews and setting up filming interviews, but it's always nice to talk to new people. And when I'm doing an interview, I just hope my dog doesn't interrupt. I bought another book on walking this week, from eBay this time. I'm amazed at how there seems to be no middle ground when it comes to packaging. It's either woefully underpackaged, or the person has used an entire roll of tape on it, and it takes an hour to get the thing open. Hopefully you tuned into the podcast last week when we talked about the English Riviera Walking Festival, and we also had a feature on walking in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan. What amazes me is that it's only the fifth biggest Canadian province out of 10, and yet it's more than 2.5 times the size of the UK. So, if you're a walker with all the provincial, regional and national parks that they have, they actually make up about half the size of the entire UK. Hopefully you've subscribed to the podcast on one of the podcast platforms. I thought that there were maybe just 3 or 4, but seems like there are at least a dozen. You can also get it on YouTube. There is also a short article associated with each podcast at walkingpost.com. where you can also get in touch with guest suggestions or anything else. This week we have 2 guests, and our subjects are the Pennine Way and Cyprus. I've only ever walked short bits of the Pennine Way, and I've never been to Cyprus, much as I'd like to. There are just so many places to walk around the world. To talk about the Pennine Way, which this year is celebrating its 60th anniversary, is Hannah Kay, Pennine National Trails Partnership Manager and Park Services Officer. And to talk about Cyprus is the person who runs the Cyprus Strollers walking group in the country, and that is Xenophon Hassapis. But before we get to the interviews, just to stall things like those YouTube videos that could be 1 minute long but take 25 to get to the point, here are some of the news articles we had on walkingpost.com this past week. A new partnership is encouraging walking for health in Northumberland. Public input is being sought on the viability of the Alaska National Scenic Trail. And RAB launched its updated Pertex Shield shell collection for spring-summer 2025. A nice tongue twister there. Almost €250,000 has been awarded for hiking trails to be created on the Greek island of Pisara. Tiva introduced its spring-summer 25 collection, and Kumi debuted its U5 Pro smartwatch. The Friends of Loch Lomond and the Trossachs came out in support of an RSPB planning application, which is good news for walkers. And in more good news, there will be more trails as the Connemara National Park in Ireland is expanding. Sweden's Höga Kusten, or High Coast in English, is a hiking area in the north of the country, and it's seen new investments and strong financial results. And you can read all of these articles and more at walkingpost.com. Okay, now it really is time for the interviews. Lots of people have walked at least a small part of the Pennine Way, sometimes inadvertently, as they do a hike, and a bit of it is on the oldest national trail in the UK. This year marks the 60th anniversary of the long distance path, which goes from the Peak District in Derbyshire to the Scottish borders. As you would imagine, the anniversary is being marked with a series of events in a few different locations. To tell us about the anniversary and some of those events is Hannah Kay, Pennine National Trails Partnership Manager and Park Services Officer. Before we even talk about the anniversary, if you could give me some facts and figures about the Pennine Way and all those good things.
Yes, all the basic stuff about the Pennine Way, I guess. There's kind of standard facts that go out there. 268 miles officially is what we say. There's a bit of variation on that because there's a couple of loops in there and different ways you can go. So sometimes people do it with their Stravas on or whatever and then come to us and say, actually, it's recorded as this much. So we're careful not to say it's officially 268 miles, but that is kind of the figure that you probably hear more often than not as the 268 miles. Right along the spine of England, which is how it's described. Obviously, we've got the spine race. We've picked up on that as well. Really good way of describing it. The rocky spine starts down in the Peak District, Derbyshire. Goes all the way, as we said, up to the Scottish borders. Pokes its head into Scotland. Just finishes up there. Goes through a number of protected landscapes on the way. So you've got the Peak District National Park. You've got the Yorkshire Dales National Park. North Pennines National Landscape, which is what the AONBs are called now. So now that's a national landscape. And then Northumberland National Park as well, and through the Cheviots. So really remote, spectacular, beautiful countryside that it's taking you through. Officially, if you were doing it by the sort of guidebooks, you'd have 16 days tends to be the traditional way of doing it. It's broken down that way. Some people split days, some people take a long break in the middle. What we're trying to encourage, and we'll talk about this as we get onto the future of the trail, is people not feeling like you have to do it as some sort of endurance test and take your 2 weeks off work and smash it, basically. Take your time. Do a bit, come back to it, you know, walk 5 miles out of Edale, come back another day. So just appreciating the National Trail, being there and being accessible as we can make it, and well signposted, and having this team of people looking after it. So the benefit of having a National Trail that everybody can access as well is what we're working towards. You're probably going to ask me how many people do it. The easiest answer to that is we really don't know as such, because of what I just said. There's lots of people doing different bits of it. There's lots of people going north to south, south to north. You don't know which way people are going on it. We have the Border Hotel in Kirkyetham in the Scottish borders that has a book where people sign when they finish. You get your half pint of beer and you sign in the book. So that's a way of working out. But again, that wouldn't get people going the other way, and it wouldn't get people doing it in stages as well, which is just as important to count as well. We do have a people counter up on sort of the Cheviots in one of the most remote places that you would go, which we think is probably a reasonable guide. And we think it's sort of in the sort of 5,000 people crossing that point at that time. So it's still a vague figure. We would think it'd be much more people who are doing it as such. So along with the distance, that's another figure that we sort of are fairly cautious about. It was the first of the National Trails as well, so we hold that very dear to our hearts. We also have the Pennine Bridleway, which is not the same route, so that is another route, follows a similar route, goes from Derbyshire to sort of the top of the Yorkshire Dales, which I look after as well, and that is for horses and bikes, whereas the Pennine Way is just, for the entirety of it, it's designated as a footpath. I mean, there are parts of it that are other designations, but it's more a footpath route.
There are communities along the way and close to the way as well, I guess, which some people just think that you start and you never see civilization for 2 weeks.
The brilliant thing about it, and I always love this about a walk, is starting and ending in a settlement. So there's something beautiful about leaving a place and then arriving in another place, like leaving Horton and arriving in Hawes, or you set off from somewhere, you know, somewhere cozy, you have your camping or your bed and breakfast or whatever, and then you do your walk and you'll walk down into, typically you'll walk up and up and up and then down, you know, and then walk down into another. And there's something very special about that, I think, as a walker, of just sort of feeling that you really feel like you're getting somewhere. You know, you're really sort of traveling over time and space if you do it that way. You know, it's very well designed from that point of view. It's very remote, but not that remote, I suppose. You know, you're not in the Appalachians or whatever. But you do still need to be prepared and organized to do it. It's, you know, you wouldn't want to set off not knowing what you were doing.
it's not exactly confusing, but the discrepancies over the distance. I think when you get to a community and you go for your lunch or you're
Yeah,
staying
exactly.
somewhere, then it's all going to be, I guess it's a
It,
minimum number, isn't it, really?
yeah, exactly. And there's when you get to Bose, there's a loop you can do that miss it, that either adds on a bit or misses a bit. And then there's a bit when you get really near to the end where you can either go to the top of the hill or not to the top. So there's all kinds of bits in there as well.
What's Pennine National Trails and what's the relationship to the Orkshire National
Yeah.
Park Authority?
So I'm Pennine National Trails Partnership Manager. I'm a job share along with my colleague Joe. So we look after the Pennine Way and the Pennine Bridleway. And we do that on behalf of Natural England, who fund the national trails, so all of the UK national trails. And we look after those, the Pennine Way and the Pennine Bridleway. And the partnership is made up of all of the authorities along the route. So that's actually, so obviously I mentioned the protected landscape, but there's lots and lots, there's all the different council areas. So there's a representative from all of those areas, so either the Rights of Way officer or the different people along that route are on there. Volunteers groups and things as well are on there. So it's a partnership of us all, led by us, and it's a lot about making sure that the Pennine Way is kept up to the standard that it should be kept up to as a national trail. So the fact that it's designated as a national trail means that we have certain quality standards that we need to keep. And we get funding from Natural England every year. We can't quite confirm that. We're still in discussions about how much that is going to be. We get a chunk of funding every year, and then each one of the partners says to us, I want to do this piece of work. I want to put some flagstones down on this area, or we really need to do some drainage on that bit of moorland. And we divvy the money up and back out. And the role of the Yorkshire Dales National Park is, as one of the partners, the Yorkshire Dales National Park is the lead partner. So somebody has to employ the partnership managers and do all the admin side of things. So the Yorkshire Dales National Park does that. So officially, me and Joe are employed by the Yorkshire Dales National Park, but we're working for Natural England and funded by Natural England. So, but the partnership is a brilliant thing. We had our partnership meeting last week in Leeds, and all the partners came together. There must have been about 20 of us in the room and about maybe 10 people on teams. So it was really good, and we're all talking about the works we wanted to do on the routes and how all the progress, talking about the 60th anniversary. So it's a really good bunch of people from the countryside area who are just, all working together. And a lot of people have been doing it for a long time, so they really know the history as well.
You mentioned all of those different pieces that go along to make that, and 20 or 30 people. Is it easy to get things done with that many parts?
It works quite well because everybody has their own section of trail. You see what I mean? If everybody was responsible for all of it, I think it would be quite difficult. But for the fact that you know who you're talking to about each bit, so if there's an issue on Pennine Ghent in the Yorkshire Dales, we know that we speak to the Yorkshire Dales National Park. And like I say, there's so much experience and knowledge in the group that actually it does work really well.
It's the 60th anniversary this year. I wonder
Yes.
if you can talk a little bit to the early days when it was founded and whether it's changed over the years.
Yeah, so I mean, the sort of history of the Pennine Way coming into being in 1965, I mean, it started a long time before that, sort of in the 30s, really. So Tom Stevenson, who you've probably heard of, he wrote this article called A Long Green Trail, basically calling for a route like the Appalachian Trail in America, saying, why can't we have this here? Why can't we have this amazing route that people can, who could fail to be inspired by walking this route? So there's a lot of things happened after around that time. There was the mass trespass on Kinder Scout as well, which is very related to the Pennine Way. So people really wanting to get out in the countryside and really feel it, exercising their right to be out in the countryside as well, which was really important. And then we got the Countryside Act in 1949 as well, which led to the national park. So there was so much stuff going on, and the Pennine Way was really a key part of that. It's really seen as really sort of integral and wrapped up in the history of that. Not particularly because of the Kinder Scout aspect, but also the fact of this long route right through the heart of the Pennines as well. And then obviously when it opened, the opening ceremony was in 1965, and it was still sort of ongoing in terms of completion then. And then there's been a few changes. I think when it started in Edale, the route it was taking, it goes right through a SSSI, and it was getting a lot of erosion. There was a lot of damage occurring, so they rerouted the route there. So there's been a reroute there up to Jacob's Ladder. And then It's a lot of the sort of moorland areas, the peat bogs areas that we've had to do a lot of work on, a lot of flagstones. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're still boggy. You know, you still will get very muddy feet walking the Pennine Way. But lots of work on putting flagstones across these moorlands to protect the environment and the nature recovery that goes hand in hand with a national trail as well. It's about protecting the environment as well. So, you know, making it easier for the walkers. But similarly, if you've got flagstones across the moor, it stops people eroding around the edges and things. So, yeah, there's been a lot of nature recovery work. Apart from that, I mean, it's been about maintaining the existing route. You know, it's a historic route. It's there for a reason. So I'd say the main work has been maintenance and raising awareness as well.
The catchment area for people to even just do portions of it would be Sheffield,
Yeah, I was
Leeds,
just going to say that,
Manchester.
yeah, the Peak District especially, people doing that. I mean, they're not necessarily going off to do the Pennine Way, but the very fact that they're on a well-marked route that's well signposted, and then just the very thought that you realise you're on the Pennine Way and you can walk all the way to Scotland, you could follow this path all the way to Scotland, I think is just amazing for people.
I don't imagine that you started thinking about the 60th anniversary celebrations in December. It's probably been quite
Yeah.
a long task. How has that all been coordinated?
It's been great actually. So that's been pretty much my project that Joe, my colleague, has been doing a lot, working with a lot of the maintenance stuff, and I kind of took it on as my project. It's a bit different as well. It's a different sort of thing to be working with. So I've been doing a lot of work on social media. To be honest, the main piece of work was the exhibition that we've put on. So we've created an exhibition called A Trail of Inspiration. And that it was one of those like, oh, that would be a great idea to do that. And then you realize, oh my gosh, it's huge. So what we've done is we have a rolling exhibition, which is going along the trail at different venues along the trail. Currently, it's in Hawes. So it opened in Hawes and it's at the Dales Countryside Museum in Hawes. It's going to be there for a few months and then we're moving to Hebden Bridge. Then it's going to Malham. Then it's going to Bowley's Visitor Centre in the North Pennines. Then it's going up to the Sill up in Northumberland. And we're just possibly, it's not official, talking about having a venue in Kelso in the Scottish Borders as well. What we didn't want to do is just have a traditional sort of history of the Pennine Way exhibition, just, you know, lots of muddy boots and maps. There is an element of that, of course. But what we wanted to do is we wanted to really engage with artists who have been inspired by the Pennine Way. So getting what they have experienced in the Pennine Way. And it's also not just people who've either run it or walked the whole thing. There's some people who have accessibility issues, couldn't get out onto the route, used to be able to get onto the route and have done paintings of what they've seen there. There's people who've written books about how they've walked the route. There's a film of somebody who's done the route. But it's really just breaking away from the traditional idea of a backpacker walking the whole route, sort of trying to get families in there. There's an artist who's done a painting of his son when they went out on a walk. There's another lady she did walk the trail and she picked up things as she went. So she's done like walking, weaving pieces of all the sheep's wool that she's found along the way. We have Simon Armitage's poetry in there because obviously he walked the trail and wrote his book. So that's in there. And an artist has done some links to his poetry in there. We've got musicians. We've got a band called The Midnight Architect. They call themselves a dad rock band. And they have written this rock song about the Pennine Way, filmed themselves at Studley Pike. So it's a real mixture. Anita Sethi is there. She's an author who wrote a book about, she walked the trail. It's a book called I Belong Here. She was on a train going through the Pennines and she had racist abuse on the train. And her way of dealing with this and reclaiming the land that she'd grown up in was to walk the Pennine Way and to write this book. And she's amazing. So everybody in the exhibition has their own particular experience of the Pennine Way. And it just goes to show how much it captures people's imaginations. So it's been a brilliant experience, quite a challenge getting all the artists together, getting all the work together. And it's the way of getting people's own experiences of the Pennine Way and also with it travelling along the route. It's a way that we could get it to everybody as well, because it's quite hard to engage with everybody on a trail on a long footpath. It's quite a hard idea of how to actually engage with people along the route. The centerpiece of the exhibition is a big collage called Our Pennine Way, and it's photos that people have sent in of themselves on the route, and not just like landscape pictures. It's photos of people with their feet in the river and having a pint when they get to places, or up to their knees in mud. So real sort of realistic, sort of funny photos. People's dogs in shelter huts and things like that. So that's worked really well. So it's about the people that have walked it and the people that are engaged and the local communities as well. the partners along the way. They're all involved in putting on their own events. Local Ramblers groups are putting on walks. So I'm pulling those together and putting them all onto our website. So there's an events page on the website. So you can go on and have a look what's in my area to do with the Pennine Way. There will obviously be a peak around April the 24th, because that's the official date that they had the opening ceremony back in 1965. So there'll be a growth in interest around then, I think. But we really want to keep it going on through the year as well and keep some walks. Girl Guides Northwest are doing some walks as well related to the Pennine Way. So there's lots of different things going on. So my sort of role is finding out what's going on, encouraging people, encouraging the partners to put on events, and then promoting them for people as well.
I know it's the first trail, but obviously it won't be the last, because we've got things like the England Yes. Coastal Path being developed. But do you think that the Pennine Way will always be sort of the jewel in the crown, so to speak?
I mean, it's great that the new trail is being developed and the coast to coast as well. So we've got the coast to coast route coming in as well, joining the National Trails family. I think the thing is, each one of the National Trails is so different. They'll all have the same designation, they all have the same standards, we're all looking after them to the same quality standards, but they'll all have their own history and they're all going to pass through really different landscapes as well. I mean, a coastal path compared to the Pennine Way, you know, is obviously so different, and they're all have quite different challenges as well. But I do think the Pennine Way, it was always going to be the first one, and it's always going to have that history around Kinder Scout and the Ton Stevenson. And also the remoteness of it, and this feeling that you've walked a path that's just been walked for so long by so many people as well. You've got that sort of history around that. And I think that's come across in all of the people that we've engaged with the exhibition as well, this feeling of history and connectiveness as well.
And I know this is the 60th anniversary, and clearly there will be a 70th and 75th. How do you see the Pennine Way changing or evolving in that time?
It's a really good question. A lot of what we're about at the moment is how can we ensure that more people can access the trail. So we'll be continuing to improve accessibility, and that's a real key focus at the moment. Things like removing stiles, so there's less physical barriers for people to get through, putting in gates that people can access themselves, improving surface conditions as well. Obviously, you don't want to take the character of the trail away, but we really think there's a lot more work we could do to improve the experience of walkers in the area. And also making sure we're protecting nature as well in the busier areas. So what we're really about, and what a lot of what the exhibition is about, is getting people to access the trail from where they are, even if it's only 1 mile, 10 miles, do what you can do and get out there. When you talk about a long distance trail, like I said at the very beginning, actually, people are like, right, I've got my 2 weeks, I'm going to do it. It's sort of getting away from that, because people will always do that. There'll always be spine race runners. People always want the challenge, but we just want people to experience it and be inspired by it, and then inspire others to do it as well.
And I guess one of the other things is, you mentioned the accessibility. It's also the coordination of helping people to feel that they can do it, because I think with a lot of trails, people think, well, if I'm not going to do it in a tent, how am I going to do it? How am I going to, where am I going to stay? Where am I going to eat?
So I think it's also, it's about information, providing information to people. I mean, a lot of what we're learning about accessibility at the moment is being descriptive, describe to people what the route is going to be like, describe what the surface is going to be like, describe what the barriers are, describe where you'd have to stay. Really being clear about what people can expect and how we can adapt and what adjustments we can make to make things better for people.
Are there companies that help with that kind of planning? So they take your bags from one place to the next and coordinate where you stay?
So on our website, there's links to a number of different baggage companies that will do the sort of legwork for you, as it were. There's a long section of the trail where there isn't anywhere to stay, so you can get picked up. There's a bit where you can get picked up and get taken back to the start point, stay there, and then they'll take you back again. And then we sort of work with accessibility companies to come out and have a look at sections of the route and say, this could improve here, this could improve here. Have you thought about putting a wider gate in here? Have you thought about making the route a bit more level here? So it's all working towards making it easier for people. But I think the thing about the Pennine Way is people are so engaged with it that there's this huge community around it, and there's so much information out there. We provide as much information as we can, but there's a Facebook group called Pennine Way Walkers, which it's honestly a goldmine of information. So people will say, I'm planning on doing the route on this day, where's the best place to stay? Or it'll just be really up-to-date information as well. So you can't underestimate social media these days in terms of local up-to-date knowledge on things. It's been great in sort of celebrating the 60th as well and finding out what's going on.
I really like that idea that Hannah was mentioning there of not having to do the entire Pennine Way in one go. I think, especially with the Pennine Way, that some people do get intimidated by it and they think that they'll never see a soul or a community and it will be too tough and they'll have to camp and all that it is marshland. So it's nice to see that you can do this in stages and that there really is life along the Pennine Way. The weather can be a bit changeable along the Pennines, but if you want nice weather, then a good destination with plenty of walking would be Cyprus. It isn't a huge island. You can get from the capital, Nicosia, to the western part of the country in a couple of hours by car. And if you're planning on a trip to Cyprus, then there is a group that will welcome you with open arms, and that's the Cyprus Strollers. They walk every weekend except in the hot summer, and they post their walks online for months at a time. And all you do is register for a walk and show up. It's a great way to meet new people and to see a new country. To tell us more about the group and the walks is the person who set the group up, Xenophon Hassapis.
This is Xenophon talking to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. The Cyprus Strollers is a hiking club fully dedicated to making hiking pleasant. And this is in fact our slogan, hiking made pleasant. It's existing for 11 years ongoing, which is a time when Xenophon, myself, returned to live in Cyprus after a 30-year spell in Athens, Greece. Cyprus Strollers is the only truly international hiking club operating in Cyprus. And when I came back to Cyprus, I recognized that an international club which communicates in written language in English was essential in a country where 50% of the population does not speak the local language Greek. Hence, the website of the Cyprus Strollers is in English. Most of our walks are frequented by people of over 7 or 8 nationalities. Many times I have counted over 10 nationalities. And this is, in fact, something which is a part of our allure, because people search for a break out of their routine, the Monday to Friday routine, and they join a club where they can mix and chat with people from all sorts of other backgrounds. We walk every weekend. We alternate between Saturdays and Sundays so that we offer a variety to people who may always be working on a Saturday. For 8 months in a year, nonstop, we are forced to discontinue over the very hot 4 months in June, July, August, September, when even up on Troodos, which is our highest mountain of around 2,000 meter altitude, it's impossible to go for a hike after 9:30 in the morning. The club is totally free of charge. There is no fee to register, no fee to join, no fee to participate. It's my approach to offering something back to the community and also benefit from the company of nice people who join me on a hike. And I see it as so many people get joy and pleasure out of hiking. And myself also get a lot of pleasure from so many people joining me, where the reverse would be to be hiking always with 1 or 2 regular friends that I have. We try to combine the pleasure of hiking with the pleasure of dining also, which means that when we conclude hiking, we hit a taverna and there we enjoy a lunch. And that is also an extension of the communication benefit, because over lunch we exchange talks, we exchange our humor, we chat about things that are happening around, things that catch our attention, and people bring their thoughts around the table. Very often, we welcome people visiting Cyprus for just a few days. In fact, it's one of our humorous pieces whereby we may welcome 1 or 2 persons who are in Cyprus for a few days, and we say welcome, and at the same time, goodbye. And people find us. They find us through the search, and they find us because we are the only club in Cyprus with a dedicated website. All our information, all our detail, all our schedule is uploaded on the website twice a year for the two seasons that spans the year for the Cyprus Trollers. So anybody doesn't even need to talk to me. They can just get the info, send an email saying that I want to join, and there they are.
How long are the walks that you do?
The walks that we do are not strenuous. We aim to limit ourselves to something between 3 and 4 hours. There are others who might find it short, but with the 3.5 to 4 hours, we appeal to a wider cross-section of hikers. People can bring along their kids. We welcome kids from the age of 6 and upwards. Of course, dogs are always welcome, and they are fun to watch a dog immerse itself in a puddle along our path.
And are you based in Nicosia?
Nicosia. I am based in Nicosia. Many of our hikers are in Nicosia, but we appeal to many people living in Limassol, which is the second largest city, many people living in Larnaca, which is the third largest.
And so do you do walks everywhere?
We do walks everywhere. Distances are so small in Cyprus. Just to get an idea, to drive from Nicosia to the top of Mount Rhodos, which is our highest mountain, requires less than 1.5 hours. So anywhere we fancy, we can just drive there.
Do people carpool to get to?
We do carpool, yeah, precisely. We do carpool because it doesn't make sense to spend more on fuel or drive on your own, or it's also environment friendly.
Right. Are you able to go into the northeast of the country?
No, in the occupied parts, the north, which is occupied by Turkey since 1974, we are admitted if we fancy, but we don't. There are so many interesting destinations to select in the Republic of Cyprus.
And do you have themes, or like archaeology or nature, or do you just pick a walk?
We essentially pick a walk on its merits, and its merits are judged by the landscape, the bushes and the trees that we will come across. We don't particularly focus on geology, even though there are some destinations that are particularly attractive on a geological aspect. Troodos, for example, was created in the old times when there was an explosion by a volcano in the center of the earth, which came up to the surface, froze immediately, and gave rise to Troodos. All that is explained nicely in some of the announcements that we have put in writing.
What are some of your favorite walks in Cyprus?
There are walks that we repeat every year. There are less popular walks that we will repeat once every second year. And those that are more popular are the ones that are in a deeper forest, in a better forested area. So for anyone who is familiar with Cyprus, I would just mention a couple of names. A favorable walk is Atalanti, which is a close to 5 hours circle, very high up on Troodos. Essentially flat, surprisingly, but it's inside the forest. And at some point, it passes an abandoned chrome mine. Another very nice walk is the Grand Circle of Madari. Madari is another peak on the range of Troodos. And by its name, when we say the Grand Circle, is that it has a significant elevation change. Again, it takes about 5 hours with a significant elevation change. More challenging.
And there are lots of different aspects to Cyprus as well. I mean, you have beaches, forests, mountains.
Precisely. There is one of our favorite walks is conducted along the path where we have the Petra Duromnu ruins. And Petra Duromnu is considered to be the coast where Venus, the goddess Venus, or Aphrodite, in Greek, rose out of the sea, out of the waves, and that is the birthplace of Venus, in other words. So one of our walks is a four-hour hike all along the coast at Petra Douromyou in Paphos district. Another very nice and particularly appealing walk is in Cape Grego, which is east, southeast, not far from the notorious Agia Napa. And there again, we walk all along the coast and we marvel at some caves. There are some very nice caves which are well known, called Thalassines Spilies.
Where do you get people from on the walk? So obviously Cyprus, but where else?
We've had nationalities from everywhere. I mean, we have Australians, Americans very regularly, from all sorts of Europe. I mean, Irish, English, French, Italians, Argentinians, many, many from Greece, from Romania, from Russians we have, Ukrainians we have, all sorts of backgrounds.
And how many people do you usually get on the walks? I mean,
on a typical walk, we will be around 25 to 30 persons. Not too many, because if you have more than 50, you tend to be a crowd.
Yeah, and then you have some people that are slower and some that are faster, and it gets difficult.
Yeah. And we manage a group of something like 25 persons can comfortably sit around a long table while we sit for dining, and then we extend the fun.
So you must see a lot of the same people as well that get to become friends?
Yeah. We have people who come back. We have people who come back. And in fact, we have people who are not permanent residents of Cyprus. They come for a holiday. They go back to their native country and they say, we'll come back when we revisit. And it's always a delight to welcome people that we met before.
The only important thing is to be prepared properly, not wearing sandals or...
Yeah. On a few walks, one needs to carry hiking poles. Always we ask people to have boots and importantly to have something in a second bag. In case we get the occasional rain, we can conclude the hike, change clothes, socks and boots, and get back to dryness to sit and enjoy lunch. We don't get a lot of rain in Cyprus on account of the worsening of the environment factor.
And then I suppose in the winter time, does it get cold when you're walking?
No, not really. We never go below 5 centigrade. Let me put it differently. We have Northern Europeans who throughout the year hike in a pair of shorts. And I have a close friend from Iceland who humorously tells us that, well, your winter is my summer in Iceland. Once, I mentioned humor before, and let me just say that once we had a hike a couple of years back where two of our participants hiked in their kilts, their Scottish kilts. One of them is Scottish, the other one is a close mate of his, and they, just out of fun, they put on their kilts and they hiked in their kilts. Yeah, we took photos, we publicized and all that. We cheered them.
Who decides on the walks?
We have a series of candidate walk leaders. Typically in a season, we have 4 or 5 different walk leaders. And the consultation is done between the walk leaders and myself. I, of course, lead most of the walks.
You said you did a lot of walking when you were living in Greece.
I did a lot of walking when I was in Greece. In fact, before I created the Cyprus Strollers, being in Athens, I had operated the Athens Strollers. The concept of the Cyprus Strollers has been proven and tested in Athens.
That's it for the interviews for this week. I've got a long list of interviews that are in the planning stages for next week, so hopefully at least some of those happen. And just one more week here in the UK before the clocks spring forward and we come in line again with most of North America, as setting up interviews there has been a bit of a challenge. It is also Mother's Day next weekend in the UK, so get those gifts bought, like a nice pair of walking socks or a pair of poles. Much better than chocolates and flowers. Maybe. Actually, maybe don't do that. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this week's walkingpost.com podcast and that you have a great week with at least one walk in it that's further than to the fridge. Until next time, happy trails! Walking Post from walkingpost.com is an Air Coastal Media Limited production.